The Lord be with you. This past week, or actually I guess 2 weeks ago now, I was down in Mexico visiting my family, and I brought a picture of them here. There we go. This is maybe about a third of the family that I went and visited down in Mexico. And some of you follow me on Facebook and on Instagram and have seen many of the other pictures that I have posted. And you've seen pictures of me celebrating with all these family members. You've seen pictures of me dining in nice restaurants overlooking 17th century colonial architecture. You've seen pictures of me dancing with Annalisa and my cousins in city plazas. But what those pictures from Facebook don't tell you is that, yes, there's all these loving family members very excited to see me, and they all want to take me out to eat, but of course they all have a very strong opinion on where we should eat, and none of those opinions agree. What those pictures don't show you is that while I do have many of these family members and they're all very excited to see me, they're all not excited to see each other because, you see, there's one aunt who a few years ago got in a fight with another aunt, but a third aunt thinks the first one's super wrong for still being mad at the second aunt, and so now the first aunt's not talking to those other two aunts, and they're both upset that they can't see me at the same time. What the pictures don't show you is that I still can't get my phone to work properly in Mexico, so I'm continually trying to navigate all these dynamics through my grandma, who of course wants to stick her opinion into every decision that's made. And if I manage to call someone on my own phone and confirm an idea, she'll call them up a few minutes later and suggest a completely different idea, and they'll assume that that suggestion came from me, and I'll have to go back and restart the whole planning process over again. At times, it feels like visiting my family is like being in a battle royale for the power of will. And I mention this because Thanksgiving is coming up. And I have a feeling that my family dynamics are not unique. Now, the exact particulars maybe, but family can be a challenge. Holidays can be a challenge because they often involve family. And I will say, I have often thought to myself when I go and visit my family down in Mexico, why am I fighting to get my will through in this place? Why do I struggle to get what I want to happen done when, in fact, I have a life completely separate from these people, right? I have a house, a wife, and a job 3,000 miles away, and at my house, I am king of the castle, and I can do whatever my wife lets me. And I will say, each time I go, I have coped with this challenge in different ways. 3.5 years ago, right before I came to Chico, I went and visited my family down in Mexico, right before Holy Week. And on that trip, what I eventually decided to do was, rather than battle to decide what I wanted to do and get other people to respect my opinion and acquiesce to it, I just decided, you know what, I was going to walk away from all the family and just go downtown to the old city plaza and stroll and just be by myself for a while. And as I was strolling along a beautiful boulevard, a police truck pulled up beside me carrying Jesus. I have a picture of it here because I thought to myself when I saw this, this is hilarious. There is literally a truck of police taking away Jesus. And it was Good Friday. So, you know, in our gospel lesson today, we hear this story. We hear the story of what happens when the police come and they arrest Jesus. And of course, what happens when Jesus is arrested is person after person asks Jesus, wait a minute, I thought you're supposed to be king. I thought kings could do whatever they wanted and make other people obey them. Why are you letting yourself be treated this way? Why not just save yourself? The political leaders say it first. Save yourself if you are the Messiah, the chosen one of God. The soldiers say it next. If you are the king of the Jews, well then save yourself. And even one of the thieves crucified beside him said, "If you are the Messiah, save yourself and us while you're at it." And so the question becomes, why doesn't he? We heard from Colossians today that Jesus is not only King of the Jews, but King of all the universe, who holds all of creation together with his very being. Does not this all-powerful God have the power to take himself off the cross, to take himself off the back of a flatbed truck, to get his grandma to listen to what he wants? Surely the king has this power. And yet, when I went to take a picture of this scene, the police on the truck, they looked at me and they said, "Hey, will you help us carry Jesus?" Now, it's Good Friday and I'm a pastor, so there's only one answer to that question. And I said, sure. So I helped take that Jesus statue, which is in a coffin down, and we set it up on the ground, and it was going to become part of a float, part of a procession for the Good Friday service. But once we had set it up, an elderly woman came and she approached the police officers. And she said to them, "My son was recently arrested. He's now in jail. I don't know when I will see him again." And she said, "I have a picture of him here. Would it be okay if I put that picture into the hands of Jesus?" And I will say, it struck me in that moment that about a block from this location, there is another statue. A statue not of Jesus, but a statue of one of the heroes of the Mexican Revolution, the man for whom that city Morelia is named after. His name is Morelos. And that statue of Morelos has him on top of a horse, triumphant, and in front of him there is a woman who has chains, and she is breaking them free. And I thought to myself, if your son is locked up, if your son is in chains, why do you put the picture of your sons in the hands of the Jesus who has died and is carried off by police? Wouldn't you put your picture of your son in the hands of the revolutionary who is breaking those chains? Today we celebrate Christ the King Sunday, and it's a day when we ponder what it means to have a king, what it means to have Jesus as that king. In our reading from Jeremiah today, Jeremiah talks about kings, but he uses the term shepherds because the first great king of Israel was King David, and he started off his life as a shepherd. But Jeremiah says the kings these days, they've become bad shepherds. He says they are shepherds who, instead of keeping the flock together, they scatter the flock and disperse them. To say this is not something isolated to Jeremiah's time. Kings throughout history have discovered that if you want to expand your kingdom, if you want to control your kingdom, the best way to do it is to scatter the people in it, to divide and conquer. The Romans were masters at this. They would go into a community and they would try to figure out what were all the fault lines, what were all the fissures, what were the ethnic divisions, the class divisions, the political divisions, so that you could get one group of people to turn on their brothers, to turn on their siblings and their cousins and fight each other. And then in the midst of all the chaos, when they had finished killing each other, you could step in as the only strong one left and you could take whatever you wanted. Divide and conquer. The Romans mastered it, and governments every century since have used it against other nations and against their own. But the sad truth is, families sometimes do this too. Families sometimes figure out that you can play one sibling against another sibling. And then when they're fighting, you can make yourself the good guy for both of them and get whatever you want. Or you can play mom and dad off of each other, a classic technique. To say this idea of dividing and conquering is how kings throughout history have claimed their territory and lifted up their strength. Now, I think the good thief on the cross knows this. Because the good thief on the cross sees the Roman centurions and the soldiers who work for Caesar, the greatest king on earth. But the good thief doesn't ask them for help. He doesn't say, "Hey, why don't you let me down from this cross and I'll serve Caesar?" No, instead he does what that mother did. He turns to the Jesus who is suffering beside him, who knows his own pain and his sorrow, who is captive at the hands of the police, and he trusts himself into that Jesus' hands. And I think the reason is because people have come to learn that these revolutionaries claiming to overthrow the powers that be, who claim that they have found your enemy and will destroy them on your behalf, in the end, eventually you become their enemy too. And the chains that you have broken become fashioned for new manacles. And so instead, both the good thief and this mother turn to a savior, to a king who shares their suffering, who understands what they are going through, who in fact is in the same place in life as they are, because they believe that if this one shares the same place where they are now, then the kingdom he brings will mean that when he is king, they will share the same place that he will have. Because you see, Jesus is king not because he divides and conquers, but because he shares and repairs. He shares his life with the suffering of others so that wherever there is suffering, there might be his kingdom. And then he repairs. He repairs relationships. If you notice, when the good thief says, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom," Jesus says, "Today you will be with me, not in heaven." He doesn't say, "Today you will be with me in the resurrection." He says, "Today you will be with me in paradise." It is the only time Jesus ever makes that promise. Because you see, in that place of death, Jesus is promising that the man who is dying beside him will find himself in the place where life began, in paradise. But to be in paradise requires being one with the people around you. Adam and Eve lost paradise not the moment they ate the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, but the moment that they turned on one another, started accusing each other for their faults. In that moment, they lost paradise, and God says, "You have to leave, because otherwise you will spend eternity hating each other, and that is not paradise, that is hell." And so Jesus not only willingly allows himself to suffer so that he can be beside this thief on his dying moment, so that this thief knows that he is not alone. This Jesus willingly suffers so that he can reconcile the crucified and the crucifier. And he does this by revealing the truth about Rome. You see, Rome justifies its strategy of dividing and conquering by saying, "Well, these people who we are getting to fight each other, they're bad people. They deserve to suffer and die. In fact, we come and we bring justice and peace by crucifying people." But Jesus says, "No. I am the one truly innocent human who has ever lived. And if your system of justice kills me, your system is not justice, but a lie. It is a lie built on violence." And the man, the good thief who is on the cross, he recognizes that. He says, "You know what? I am not a perfect person. Perhaps I am justly condemned to die." But he says, "This Jesus isn't." And then 6 verses later, a centurion who has overseen Jesus' crucifixion comes to the same realization. On Jesus' death, he says, "Truly, this man was innocent." And you have to understand, when the centurion says that, he is a man who has worked for the system that put this innocent man to death. In that moment, the centurion has acknowledged that he is part of a sin that is not just his own actions, but is defining the actions of his entire society. And yet he says that truth, having already heard the words of Jesus, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Because it's not enough for Jesus to make sure the dying thief is a part of his kingdom. Jesus needs to make sure that the man who has nailed him to the cross is also a part of his kingdom, because Jesus wants all people to be a part of his kingdom. The crucified and the crucifier. And what that means is when a mother whose son has been arrested goes to the police force who arrested her son and put him in chains and says to them, "Here is a picture of that man you arrested and locked away. Can I put him in the hands of Jesus?" The police say, "Of course." Because we share the same king. And so we are on the same team. We may have been pitted against each other because of our place in society, but in the place of God's kingdom, we are siblings. And so the mother placed her son's pictures in the bloodied hands of Christ. The police, the mother, and this man so out of place, we were one in that moment. And I will say it is a humbling thing. It is a humbling thing to see how far a mother will go to be connected to her son, to know that her son is in loving hands. It is humbling to recognize how far Jesus will go to make sure that no one dies alone, to make sure that in the end all people can be reconciled so that we can be one in the kingdom that has no end. It is particularly humbling when that smacks you in the face after you have just walked away from your own family. When you have just walked away from your own family because they are fighting over who gets to spend the most amount of time with you. When they are fighting over what's the best way to show off your culture and your heritage. It is so humbling to realize that I have such privilege to get to go and visit family who love me, and yes, they may have their dysfunction. But it is not malicious. It comes out of them not knowing how to bring forth the kingdom of God any more than I do. And so on this week, when we enter into the holiday seasons, as perhaps you go to be with family, or as perhaps you prepare to spend these days without, know that Christ is your king. And in his kingdom, there is a place for you. Whether that place for you is a place for the suffering and the grieving because your family is not here, whether it is because they are serving abroad, or because they have died, or because the differences are so great that you can't stand to be together, that even if you can't be with them, that they are still in the same hands of Christ that you are. And if to say perhaps you have fear to go and see your family because there is such brokenness that there are people in your family who seek to divide and conquer, to have power over one another, remember that Christ is your king, and he alone defines who you are. And I pray that his power may be to reveal to the members of your family the ways in which their actions cause harm and division and prevent the unity of love that Christ calls us to as family members. And I pray that if perhaps, like me, you have the privilege of being with your family this holiday season, may you remember that our strength is found not in the power to force other people to do what we want for the holidays, but our strength is found in the power that Christ displayed. And having the strength to be present with people in their suffering, to know where they are in their place at life, to hear what it is that they need, to know that in this time they are not alone, but united in the kingdom that has no end, ruled by the love of Christ. Amen.